The hope, done sensibly, is that the incentives for investment and economic growth will bring in enough growth and therefore tax revenues. But if it's guaranteed to stay level as long as you paid it for the entire 20 or 30 years, so you felt very secure, and you figured, gee, 20, 30 years from now, the mortgage is paid off.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And here we are on Wednesday afternoon. Welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch as we come from the Allstate Skyline Studio high atop the Chicago River on this last day of summer in 2018. Terry, you were outside more recently than me, right?
I just ran in. It's beautiful. It's gorgeous. Let's keep it that way for the rest of the month.
Hitting the 80s. Well, we got hockey season starting tomorrow. Okay, Terry Savage is in the studio. So let's just jump right into it because there are a number of things that I want her to explain to me. First of all, okay, let's start. The Dow is approaching the 27,000 mark, not too far.
We are at the moment 26,927.
Yeah, not too bad. I think this is the longest stretch between thousands in a while. I don't know if that means anything, 173 days so far. But boosted today by the strong jobs report from ADP.
Right. We are, let's not get bored with this, we are getting all kinds of good economic news. And I think as the last few months, every time we spend a little time at the beginning of the show talking about what's happening in the economy, the reports, the news of the day, it's been good news, good news, good news for the most part. Consumers are confident. Consumers are shopping. They're looking forward to shopping for the holiday season. The jobs report today, that's the ADP report, which previews, presages the Federal Unemployment Statistics Report and Job Gains Report for September, will be released always the first Friday of the month. And it looks like that's going to show that unemployment is down and new jobs have increased.
They were off a little bit last month, as I recall, but
not materially.
Okay.
Okay. I mean, what we have is a giant uptrend. I just think about years ago when we would sit here and talk about how many more layoffs were announced and how many more plant closings were announced. Let's remember these happy days. We are now in the longest economic recovery ever in terms of months, span of months. And let's enjoy it. And then let's, like the little squirrels, put away a few little acorns for a rainy day.
The bank stocks are doing well today, right? The Treasury?
Well, because look, on the face of all the strength in economic growth, there is a reasonable certainty, I mean, practical, let's call it a certainty, the Fed will raise rates again, and that, in fact, the demand for money and growth will be so high that in the financial markets, interest rates are up. Now, the 10-year Treasury, which was under 2% 6 or 7, 8 months ago, is now got to a new high of 3.14%. The 10-year Treasury is the IOUs from the government, not only the ones they'll issue this month, but all the ones that are outstanding are freely traded in the huge government bond market, the $1 trillion government bond market. And interest rates are higher. That means rates move higher throughout the economy. Mortgage rates now at 5%. Forget those 3.5, 3.87 mortgages. So eventually, the higher rates could have an impact of slowing the economy, but right now they are a reflection of the growth and the demand for money, and the Fed's probably that it's going to raise rates.
You know, I read something yesterday and I think it was in Bloomberg, and they said that summarizes where we are right now. You tell me. Amazon announcing that it's going to pay all of its workers a minimum wage of $15, right? So they're getting more money because there's a demand for the workforce. And we've talked about this.
You heard me take a breath.
I know.
Okay.
Pepsi took a hit yesterday because they announced that their prices were going to go up because of the cost of aluminum and such. So through those two stocks, we sort of see where we are right now.
Secret word called inflation.
Yeah.
Look, it's nobody wants to stand up here.
Inflation comes with increased wages.
Well, inflation comes with a lot of money. Okay. And and pushing prices higher. And when money starts moving more quickly, you get that sense of inflation quickly. We poured tons of money into this economy over the past decade to save ourselves from going down the drain. That money's been floating around. It's been made in loans to, you know, third world nations and so on and so forth. But there's just a lot of money around. And there was a great social outcry about the fact that dividends may have gone up and CEOs' pay might have gone up. And Amazon did the practical thing, not only because they wanted to be good citizens and get some good PR, but because look at this job market. all of a sudden, wherever you go, you're seeing help wanted signs, interviewing signs, job opening signs. So they have to be able to attract workers for the holiday season. That made a headline.
Okay, that was...
It'll push costs up for them. You know?
Sure, and for us. I got a notice, by the way. I'm a member of Dollar Shave Club, right? A subscription.
Uh-huh.
Got a notice from them, an email yesterday. We're going to have to start collecting your state taxes because we hadn't in the past.
Happening.
That's
everywhere.
Kicking up in October, so others will see that. Okay, so that was a headline yesterday. The headline today has to do with Donald Trump and his...
Oh, are you going here?
The 1 million...
Right now?
Well,
do you want to talk about retail sales? All right, go ahead.
His story was that he was given a $1 million loan from his dad and has turned it into a fortune, which is a loan. $1 million is a big, big thing. But now the New York Times, through this extensive reporting, has said, I think it's something like $400 million he got from his father. And it's an 8-page story in the New York Times. I want you to tell me, as a personal financial advisor...
How
you do that, and how frequent. I mean, I suspect...
You talk about the Dollar Shave
Club. I suspect this is done a lot.
You talk about the Dollar Shave Club?
Yeah.
He's a member of the Lucky Sperm Club.
Okay, but...
Can I say that on radio?
You did, but...
Okay.
But I suspect that this is a good example of how the rules are written for the rich.
No. Here's what but the...
Feel free to disagree.
No. Especially back then. Let me explain. Here is why the New York Times is so up in arms, and they say, I haven't seen this all, they've said they have the documents. Back in the olden days, I think in the late 90s when I was first writing books, if you died with more than $600,000, today the limit is $11 million, $11 million, but as a couple, but as an individual, over $5 million.
Sure, the inheritance tax.
If you died as an individual with over $600,000, everything you passed on to your heirs, your children, unless you left it to a charity, for example, was taxed at a 55% rate. That spawned all kinds of tax planning. So presuming this all happened maybe 2 decades ago, and even younger when assets were put in this child's name. You know, you don't have to pay the tax immediately. It's a combined gift and inheritance tax. So when you give your 2-year-old, whatever it was, $1 million at age 2, maybe he's referring to that first $1 million gift at age 2 that he got. All of those have to be totaled. Your lifetime gifts have to be totaled up. And if you gave away $450-something million to one son, and presume he had other children too, if you gave away $450 million to your son, they would go back and look at the years and what the tax rates were.
But they weren't gifts. But they weren't gifts. They were.
But the way. So here's. Yes, but you would have owed more than half of that money in taxes.
Okay.
Now the question is, and that the New York Times, I understand, is bringing up, is how were these transfers made? They ultimately benefited someone else. That is defined as a gift. And despite using a convoluted series of trusts, and many wealthy families have done this.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay. But the fact is, that some of these, according to the New York Times, were totally egregious. And that, number one, the family owed taxes, and maybe if they went back, although the statute of limitations on criminal fraud has expired, civil fraud penalties, they could go back. That's number one. Number two, they're saying maybe that's why he didn't want to show all his assets, or his tax returns, because it would divulge these assets, wonder how he got them.
There's a good amount of this that appears hinky. The statute of limitations is expired, but there's also a good schooling in how you can legally move money around to avoid taxes if you're wealthy.
Well, look, there are some wealthy families in Chicago that were in headlines over the years for moving money to offshore trusts and so on and so forth.
And they're still in the headlines.
And they employ very top-notch attorneys and so forth to manipulate. They did in those days. Now their generation scheme, and they get you if you do a generation skipping trust, but you can create a generation skipping trust.
Okay, I got to take a break, but
there are tax breaks, yes.
And let me be clear in this: if I had that money, I would find those lawyers and get those tax breaks too.
Right. What the Times is alleging is they didn't do all that strictly by the book and take advantage of real tax breaks. And by the way, today all of you don't have to worry about it, because unless you're leaving over about $5.5 million. you won't be subject to.
That's Terry Savage. Yes. We're going to take a break, come back, and she's going to talk about why you don't want to live to be 100, maybe. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, here on 720 WGN. Terry Savage is in studio, writes about personal finance, all sorts of different places, but I usually find her at terrysavage.com, where there's a new column up about outliving your life insurance.
Yeah, this is really weird. Oh, by the way, you don't, the Tribune Content Agency syndicates my column around the country now. So I never know if it's you folks who are listening here in Chicago that post
that
questions.
Who you hear from? Yeah,
yeah,
I'm
exactly.
Sure they're all Business
but
Lunch listeners. It's,
and all our Business Lunch. I got very nice comments from so many people. I listened to you on the Business Lunch and could you tell me this or that? So I stay up late at night answering your questions. And this column was triggered by one of those questions. I think it was a brother and sister, or two sisters, say they've been taking care of their elderly mother, and they were using some of their own retirement money because they knew she had life insurance. And when they died, they would replenish their retirement. When
with
her mother died, yeah,
right.
they would have the benefits of the life insurance policy. It was $100,000 or $1 million, I don't know. But that they got a call from their insurance agent that said, oh, good news is you don't have to pay any more premiums for the next 2 years. But the bad news is their mother, who was, I think, 92 or something like that, the insurance will expire. It will endow at age 95. Which means, this is the way policies were written way back. See, I don't want your eyes to glaze over, everybody out there, when I talk about life insurance. I'm not talking about policies where you didn't put enough in, or term life insurance policies that only had a 10 or 20 year term and you knew they were going to expire. I'm talking about good old fashioned whole life, universal life policies where you kept putting all the money in, you pay the premiums, the insured is now 90, 92 or something like that. And what you didn't realize way back, or people didn't realize 30, 40 years ago when they bought this insurance, that a fixed age, 90, 93, 95, that policy would, quote, mature. And what would happen is...
So they said the insurance until you die or turn 95.
Exactly. But nobody paid attention
right.
to that. But now we're all living longer. So what happens is when you reach that age, first of all, let's back up. If the children had received, let's call it a $100,000 policy, they would get the $100,000 tax-free
inheritance
beneficiaries
under the,
inherited
under
when
the estate
she dies.
Level you were talking about.
Yeah, if,
right.
she, no, that doesn't even count.
I understand,
okay,
right.
They get the money tax-free, the beneficiary, all right? So they were counting on having that money to supplement their retirement, which they spent on their mother. But when she reaches age 95, her policy will mature, and they will give money back. But listen to how this works. First of all, the internal workings of the policy mean, because she paid for insurance over the years, that the money she put in, she's not going to get all that money back. She may get half the money back.
So she's going to get back what she paid and then a little interest on what she paid?
And portions of that will be taxable.
Wow.
So the net benefits to the heirs could be far less than what you, maybe it's only $30,000 after taxes.
So if you have life insurance.
And the insurance goes away.
So you should, check, right, see if it expires. What if it does?
Then you get a little bit of money back.
But let
me back up. If you're buying life insurance, whole life now, currently they write policies till 121 years. I remember when I bought my whole life policy many, many years ago, and they said, it'll be 95. I said, no, my grandmother was 92.
Right, right.
I want it to be 110, and I paid more in premiums. But so now current policies for full whole life policies are written to about 100. But check, when does this policy mature? Second of all, you check about when your policy matures, your mother's policy. It's time to do a life insurance checkup. The full column's at terrysavage.com.
Terrysavage.com. She can see me looking at her.
I can tell you're running out of time.
I'm in antsy mode.
Do you know that
don't
you're taking...
That. Don't
wait,
no what?
You're taking a vacation day next Tuesday?
You're filling in for me.
And I'm filling in.
Tuesday.
And we're going to do Q&A. And
okay.
I don't know what else.
Everybody,
I'm going to pretend to be you.
Everybody listen to Terry Savage on Tuesday. I'm going to be in London. I think I might get up in the middle of the night. Just to listen to you.
Wait, I'll fill
stop
in you
stop talking
in
to me. You've got to
okay,
stop.
You got a commercial.
And Tuesday, you'll see what the clock is like.
Oh, yeah. It'll be my turn.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. This is Steve Bertrand on the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, here on 720 WGN. All right, we're about 30 minutes and change away from that big national alert, a cell phone alert. I think it's the first they've ever done. We'll talk to Randy Schaefer about that coming up a little bit later in the program. But right now we say hello to Cash. Is Frank on line one or which line? I'm sorry. There's a couple there. All right. Say hello to Frank Sennett. Frank, welcome to the Biz Lunch.
Hey, thanks, Steve.
I had to reach there a little bit. Frank from Crane Chicago Business joins us on most Wednesdays. Okay, were you up late last night? Were you out late last night?
I was. I was at Wrigley, and it was a tense night, and then it was a very disappointing night.
Were you glad you were there?
Yeah, I was. It was it was history, the longest playoff game in Wrigley history, and just didn't turn out that the good guys got the upper hand.
No, it didn't. But there's always, I'm not going to say it. Okay, so Frank is here to talk about what's new in Cranes. A couple of stories, interesting sort of, maybe a trend here or something we're moving toward. A story by Stephanie Goldberg about a program that Dick Durbin has been pushing called HEAL. And this is where Chicago hospitals sort of make a commitment to hire in neighborhoods that are wanting for jobs. Explain this for me.
Yeah, so there's this initiative that 10 of Chicago's largest hospitals have jumped on board with. They want to reduce violence and improve health in 18 hard-hit Chicago neighborhoods on the south and west sides. And so they are going to be hiring and purchasing local are some of the commitments that they're making. They want to do a 15% increase in hiring and a 20% increase in purchasing relevant supplies and services from local suppliers, according to the plan. So they're really trying to help put their money where their mouth is in revitalizing these hard-hit neighborhoods.
So the idea is they'll hire from neighborhoods that are in need of employment and help things out that way. I kind of like, and I don't know that 15% is a modest goal, but I kind of like that it seems more realistic than 20, 30, or, you know, I'm kind of worried about the people holding jobs. I mean, they're qualified people from other neighborhoods who also need jobs. So I think 15% is a nice sort of middle ground there.
It seems realistic, like you say, and it's this cycle of poverty. We talk about the chicken and egg aspects of it. You need the infrastructure, you need the investment in the community, you need the education, the opportunity. But this is the opportunity part. So, I mean, you can't have a revived community without all those pieces.
Right.
And here's people stepping up to provide one of those pieces.
All right, so there we've got the 10 major hospitals in Chicago doing that. Then there's a story about AT&T, and they've hired 400 people. It sounds like same sort of idea from neighborhoods hit hard by gun violence.
Yeah, almost all maps, one-to-one, same basic neighborhoods on the south and west sides. They saw that these neighborhoods, again, need some investment, and their employees actually stepped up and made this suggestion. Hey, why don't we target hiring in these communities, give people an opportunity, a chance to, you know, get out of this cycle of violence? So the 19 areas most affected by gun violence are seeing the focus from AT&T, and they have hired 400 people this year for jobs at its stores and call centers, and that's in a workforce of 4,600 in Cook County, so a pretty decent percentage. And they're looking to not only do more in Chicago in these hard-hit communities, but also looking at it as possibly something they can take to other cities where they do business across the country if this works out.
I like it. They call it Believe Chicago, but you can insert any name or region in after Believe and maybe make this a national outreach. The other thing is they're not just jobs. They're not just entry-level jobs. They're jobs with a path, they say, toward eventual union membership or a little stability or a little chance at income growth.
Yeah, they're not just dead end jobs, like you say. They're the path to a potential career. So I think obviously the education piece has to come in, other pieces have to come in, but this is pretty key.
All right, I see Forbes is out with its list of the richest Pritzkers in Chicago.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. 15 Illinois residents on the Forbes 400 this year, and there's some Pritzkers on there for sure.
Right, so the Forbes 400 comes out. There are, how many did you say, 13 in Chicago?
13.
Okay.
Down from 14 last year.
And it's Rishi Shah who is knocked off the list?
That's right, the co-founder of Outcome Health, which has had, you know, all sorts of problems with the investors suing the firm, charging it had inflated its financial results, Department of Justice, and, you know, all that.
We've talked about Rishi a lot in Outcome. It's a meteoric rise, and unfortunately it looks like the fall is Well, maybe not. Maybe they'll be able to recover, hopefully, but it's been rough there. So, okay, the richest Chicagoan is another guy who's we've talked about a lot. He won't come on and be on the show. We haven't invited him, but I doubt that he would. Ken Griffin, the CEO of Citadel. Well, he was a remarkable guy. I mean, this guy is just
he's
great success.
He's here with me right now, and he just nodded that he would totally come on. You just have to reach out to his people.
I thought you meant he just nodded he'd never talk to me. But this guy is a remarkable. He's politically active, very conservative, politically active, but socially active. He's just it's sort of an interesting, kind of a quiet guy, a very interesting study.
Yeah, and he is number 45 on the overall list, the richest person in Illinois, according to Forbes, net worth of $10 billion, up $1.5 billion over the last year. So he's doing pretty well.
All right, so there's the top in Illinois. And then Sam Zell follows that. But then we get to the Pritzker era. So 172 is Thomas Pritzker, the chairman of the Pritzker organization. Then J.B. Pritzker at 251, running for governor. G.G. Pritzker, a film producer and co-founder of Odd Lot Entertainment. And then Penny Pritzker is at 302, the founder of Pritzker Realty, former commerce secretary. So the Pritzker is well represented. And then let's not forget Ty Warner, still hanging in at number 316, the CEO of Ty Inc., which brought us the Beanie Babies. So the Beanie Babies lives, Frank Sennett.
That's right. They keep pumping out the royalties, apparently.
All right. You've got more free time now. Cubs are off, and we'll check in again next Wednesday to see what's going on at Cranes.
Thanks, Steve.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Steve Alexander. You're listening
yes, sir.
To... I appreciate it. And how many dairy expos have you been to?
I haven't been to any because I have to be.
How many?
I have to be here to work for Orion when he goes.
How many
he
wheels?
Goes to all of them.
How many wheels of cheese do you think Orion has consumed at the dairy expos over the years?
Wow!
I know. Well, he'll be back. Or you'll be back tomorrow, or he'll be back tomorrow.
He'll be back tomorrow.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you again soon. I hope.
Okay.
Steve Alexander. See you, buddy. Randy Schaefer is in the studio. She is a digital news editor at the Chicago Tribune. So that when you go to Tribune stories and you comment on them, Randy is the one who.
Reads all your comments.
Digitally edits them. How are you? Thanks for coming by.
Good. How are you?
I'm a little nervous. You know, we've got this big national test coming up in about 15 minutes or so. I really haven't studied for it. Okay. What do I need to know?
Absolutely nothing.
Really?
It's
going to happen.
It's going to happen. Your phone's going to go off in how long? How long do you have the countdown going for?
I think it's 08, isn't it?
118.
Okay.
118. It's just a test, a government test of your phone's alert system. No need to panic.
So it's a lot like the, you know, with the radio station or TV stations where they have the EBS test or the EAS
beep.
Test. Right.
Beep.
This is a test.
Yes.
And that's just what they're going to do now because it won't be long or maybe
because
we're already there.
2018 and we all use smartphones.
And so people are thinking they're calling it a presidential test. Which
right. It's called, the technical term for it is the Presidential Emergency Alert System. And we had a story about this written by S.A. Olomense, and a lot of people were kind of mad that from their comments, it seemed like the president could directly reach into their pocket and toggle their cell phones.
Well, it just shows how we become fairly or unfairly so Donald Trump consumed because this was not his idea, right?
Right. No. This is a system that's been in place for quite some time.
It goes back to George W. Bush, I think.
Yeah.
Started the planning for this test. So.
Right.
And they were going to do it last month, weren't they?
I think so, but my phone didn't go off, so
I think
guess
it was.
Didn't happen.
They were worried about Hurricane Florence, maybe.
Understandably.
Okay, talking about Trump consummation. No, that's not it. Not consummation. No,
consumption.
That's it. Thank you very much. The Kavanaugh hearings are ongoing, and so we heard this week that maybe Brett Kavanaugh got into a bar fight. So now
or something.
And you guys posted that, and then there's a big reaction about people bragging about their own bar fights.
Yeah, so there's been a lot of reaction. We didn't have this story, but GQ did, about fellow conservative men that were standing in solidarity with Kavanaugh tweeting about their own bar fights, which apparently
kind of standing up, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I worked at a bar all through college. I never witnessed a bar fight, so apparently this is more common than I thought.
You've never seen one, so you've never been in one either, I'm assuming.
No, somebody did light my hair on fire once, but that was when smoking was allowed in bars, and maybe I'm dating myself a little bit here.
Well, no, you know what? Honestly, we kind of approached this earlier off the air, but fighting used to be much more common than it is now.
And you were telling me this, yeah.
And I've said this on the air before, but I mean, as a kid or even a young adult going to baseball games, going to the stadium for games, hockey, Bulls, there always were fights in the stands.
And I've seen fights on the ice at hockey.
On the ice, but I'm talking about, because you would see these guys in the yellow windbreakers, they were the security, and you just see sorts of flecks of yellow running through parts of the stands, and you'd follow them to see where the fight was, and then you'd, everyone, I can remember being at baseball games where people would stand up, turn away from the action, and watch the fight.
So it sounds like you're deflecting a little bit. Have you been in a bar fight?
I have.
No comment?
Not directly. I haven't, but I it is interesting. So I think if you're a certain age, it might be a little more common. But still, I think it should be frowned upon.
I would agree with that.
People who are on Instagram probably aren't too familiar with bar fights, but they're going to be shopping for Christmas, not at their laptop, not at their mall, but on Instagram this year.
Yeah, Instagram, Snapchat, the mobile phone, which I think is kind of funny because my generation apparently killed brick and mortar stores, and now the upcoming generation is killing the internet stores.
I mean, how fast did they go, right? That you're not going online to a particular store's site anymore to buy. You're buying through ads on Instagram?
Ads on Instagram or third-party apps, Shop to Know It, Like to Know It, Link to Know It, all of these various ads I see popping up all the time. This is how teens are consuming their products now.
And is there science to back this up, or is this just anecdotal?
No, there's actually science to back this up. CNBC ran this story about how those between ages 17 and 22, so Gen Z, they're not shopping through internet browsers anymore. They are shopping through their smartphones.
Well, and if that's the case, then it's really passive shopping, right?
I mean,
it's absolutely stuff that's presented to them.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, you have to think most of those things are probably discounted, too, because stores kind of like discount codes and throwing that stuff in your face.
I actually bought a coat, had it delivered, came yesterday, and it was my first real online impulse buy.
I
got an email from, like, look at this coat, and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to buy this coat.
Because winter is coming.
Winter is coming, and I'll sell it to you for half price because I really don't like it.
On Instagram?
No, not on Instagram.
I'm going to have to pass then, Steve.
Randy Schaefer is a digital news editor. Okay, so people want to comment on stories or find you. What do they do?
They can follow us on Twitter at Chicago Tribune, exactly how it sounds.
ChicagoTribune.com. Randy Schaefer, thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch. Here we are on 720 WGN.